Good afternoon. Before we get started, let me just run through real quickly, just for your planning purposes, some events that the president will be doing in and around the meeting later this month at the United Nations General Assembly. We'll have more detail on this for you then, but I just wanted to give you just a quick sketch. The president, of course, will deliver his first address to the UN General Assembly. Secondly, he will attend and deliver remarks at Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's climate change summit.
Can you give us some dates?
That would be good if I had them. I don't at the moment. Third, the president will attend the Secretary General's luncheon for heads of state and host the traditional American reception for other heads of state. The president will also host a lunch for heads of states and governments from sub-Sahara Africa to discuss building a 21st century partnership to increase economic and social development. Here's one date I do have. On September 24th, the president will chair a summit-level meeting of the UN Security Council on the topic of nuclear nonproliferation and nuclear disarmament. This is only the fifth time in the history of the UN that a head of state level Security Council summit has been convened, and the first time ever that a U.S. president will chair a UN Security Council summit.
Did he ask for it?
We did ask for it and are heading it. And then lastly, the president will host a meeting with countries that contribute the largest number of troops and police to UN peacekeeping operations. More detail on this as we get a little closer to UN, but wanted to walk. Yes, host a meeting with countries that contribute the largest number of troops and police to UN peacekeeping operations.
Are all heads of state invited to the reception?
I don't have a list of who's RSVP.
Would President Ahmadinejad be invited?
I doubt it.
Who controls the invite?
Burton does.
No, but I mean, is it U.S. or?
Yeah, this is an American reception, so yes. All right, now back to our regularly scheduled programming. Yes, ma'am.
Why would he be left out?
Because Iran is failing to live up to its international obligations.
There are no other nation in the UN.
I think there are others that might miss out on the hors d'oeuvres. Yes, ma'am.
Earlier today, Speaker Pelosi said that she sees little support in the country or in Congress for sending more troops to Afghanistan. And as the president decides what he's going to do in Afghanistan, do her comments kind of box him in any way?
Look, as we've discussed before, obviously the assessment that has been delivered to Central Command, to the Pentagon, and to the White House from General McChrystal is part of a rigorous assessment process that the president wanted instituted upon coming into office and to reassess our strategy in this very important region of the world. That continues to be discussed here and at the Pentagon. As we've also talked about, separate resource decision reports will be coming in the next few weeks, but have not been received as of yet. The president will make a decision based on what he thinks is in the best national security interest of this country.
What is his time frame for making a decision? And when he does make a decision, how will he?
Well, it's hard to, again, the evaluation process is ongoing on the original assessment. We've not received yet a resource report from commanders in Afghanistan to begin to consider. So there are several different assessments that will happen prior to that, and this is an ongoing process.
Haven't they been told not to ask for more troops?
Not in any way, shape, or form. Yes, ma'am.
Speaking of Iran, yesterday you said the administration wanted to see progress from Iran in the proposals that it submitted yesterday. Now that you've had a chance to look at them, did you see what you wanted? Also, Iran saying that the proposals did not deal directly with its nuclear activities. Is that the case? And finally, Russia came out a little bit ago and said the UN Security Council would not support oil sanctions. Does this administration agree?
I have not seen the Russian comments. Let me speak more broadly about Iran and obviously this week's discussion at the IAEA makes further clear the concern that the international community has and the gravity that we have about Iran's illicit nuclear program. Iran has failed to address past violations, failed to comply with UN Security Council resolutions, to suspend its nuclear activity. The offer is still being evaluated by the P5 plus one. I would say Iran's proposals have time and again failed to live up to its international obligations. And we've discussed that Iran obviously has two paths that they can choose. One of those paths leads to increased international isolation if they don't take concrete steps to end their program. As we get closer to the UN and the G20, obviously there'll be a period of discussion and evaluation as to where we are and as we move forward together with the international community. Yes, sir.
The president last night, said that the bills, the health care reform bills, whatever he signs, will be deficit neutral and will bend the cost curve. Mm-hmm. The Democratic bills that have been introduced in the House and Senate so far, at least according to the Congressional Budget Office, will not do that. They will increase the deficit, according to Doug Elmendorf, and they will not bend the cost curve. In fact, the cost curve will continue to go up. Does the White House accept what the CBO director says about these bills? And if so, what pressure is the White House conveying or using on Congress and Democrats to improve these two elements that the president said were so important to him?
Well, let me take these separately. First and foremost, it's not up to us to judge. Obviously, we take at face value whatever the CBO says about legislation, as we've discussed in here. The proposal that the president outlined last night is obviously in some ways different than what has been discussed on Capitol Hill thus far. I think CBO would be one of the first to tell you that one way to bend that cost curve is to go after and discuss how to prevent what the president called Cadillac health insurance plans last night that tend to make steeper that curve going upwards. I think one of the things that the CBO has said is addressing that will put that downward pressure on cost. And obviously the president, as part of his plan last night, outlined a fee on insurance companies that offer these Cadillac plans after at a certain rate. So I think that first and foremost is one of the things that the president outlined. And I think secondly, the president outlined a trigger, a deficit trigger that would evaluate whether or not savings have been achieved, and if savings haven't been achieved before moving forward, how that savings can be achieved before the plan is fully implemented in 2013. I think those are two ways that the president outlined last night to address those concerns. But Jake, you heard him, I think, say pretty clearly that this was this has to change the direction of government spending on health care, and this has to not add a dime to the deficit. The president is very serious about keeping those promises.
How firm is he being with Democratic leaders? Because we've heard that from Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi that they're 90% there. You guys have said that there's 80% agreement. seems to be that there, I understand the
president. I put some of the proposals the president outlined in that sort of 10 to 20% range.
Was it going to be that significant? I mean, are these major steps that are actually going to change the impacts of these bills according to the CBO analysis?
Well, absolutely. I mean, again, the I think the CBO has evaluated a number of cost-cutting mechanisms that have been outlined, and the one that they think has the greatest ability is to deals with these Cadillac health insurance plans, which the president talked about last night. So I do think the president believes that will have an impact on the cost curve. Yes, ma'am.
Congressman Wilson's apology, I don't want to dwell too much, but how was that apology conveyed to the president last
night? My understanding that Congressman Wilson called the chief of staff last night. I can check on the time in which we got an email on that, an hour or so after the conclusion of the speech, to express his apology for what he had said, and that the chief of staff accepted that on behalf of the president.
The apology conveyed to the president this morning?
Or last night.
Last night as well.
But, you know, again, the president, to reiterate what the president said in the cabinet meeting, you know, we can disagree. He said this millions of times. We can disagree without being disagreeable. That we can have an honest debate about our views on health care and what we think is best for the American people, but we can do so without what you saw last night, and I think it's obvious that Congressman Wilson agrees with me.
Do you have details on this meeting with the president and centrist Democrats today in the Senate?
You know, I think we will, if we haven't already put out a list of senators that will be there. I think there's 15 to 17 that will be there.
What time?
I think it's at 4:15 this afternoon, if I'm not mistaken.
And what's the president's message going to be?
Well, I think I think the president wants to talk through with moderate Democrats and centrist Democrats some of the proposals that he outlined last night, some of which we just talked about that have and enjoy their support, and figuring out how we can continue to move this process forward. We'll have a short readout from after the meeting as well.
How long do you think about that?
I think it's on the schedule for probably 30 to 45 minutes, but we'll check. Yes, ma'am.
He has satisfied the liberal Democrats, and also what is he going to do now to keep the momentum?
Well, I think most of you have seen that we will travel on Saturday to Minnesota to talk again about the importance of health care reform and to keep this going. You know, in terms of, I think what the president outlined last night is something that can appeal to Democrats and Republicans and bring people together to solve this problem that we've been talking about for so long. I don't want to speak directly for members of Congress, but judging from many of the comments that I've seen in reporting today, I think the president did a good job of appealing across the political spectrum in outlining a proposal that the elements of which he thinks can represent an important step forward in health care reform. Yes, sir.
Senator Baucus today said that, as far as he's concerned, it sounded like the president was reading his plan, or our plan, as he put it. He said it sounds like we're in sync. The openness to co-ops, $900 billion, deficit neutral, deficit trigger. Was the president making a conscious effort to move in the direction of the Gang of Six Baucus plan?
Well, look, obviously the president fully supports and has lauded the efforts of the Finance Committee to continue to work on getting a plan out of their committee. And obviously, he talked about four of five committees of jurisdiction, something that's never happened before, has completed that work. Senator Baucus announced earlier yesterday that the committee would convene on the 21st to mark up legislation. Again, I think it's a tremendously positive and important development on continuing health care reform through the congressional process. Look, I think there's plenty of room for agreement The president has used the figure that Jake cited is about 80% agreement, I think a lot of which he reiterated last night. And we certainly hope that the Finance Committee, the Gang of Six, Republicans and Democrats will find enough to like in all these pieces of legislation and in this proposal to move something forward.
A lot of your favorite people, the pundits, are concluding already that what the president was basically doing by making an argument for public option, but then making so clear that he's open to either the co-op or the trigger, he's basically saying, I'm moving in the direction of Baucus and Company or the trigger, and you 100 or 80, whatever you are, liberal Democrats in the House, you're going to have to face reality here. You're not going to get what you want. Was that the president's message last night?
Well, I mean, without referring to my good friends, the pundits, I'd look more directly at just exactly what the president said. I think there's no doubt that the president laid down the notion that we have to have options, particularly in a private insurance or a small group insurance market, that, as the president noted, 75% of more than half the states are dominated by just five companies in each state. I have used the example many times of Alabama being dominated. 89% of that insurance market is dominated by exactly one company. That we have to have that choice and competition. And quite frankly, we've always thrived in this country with choice and competition in whatever it is. I think he reiterated that the public option is not the be-all, end-all of healthcare reform. That he's open to ways to achieve choice and competition and wants to work with Congress to see that happen. I think this is part of the process of bringing people together and getting a solution.
A lot of people say what you just said is kind of a death knell, really, for a robust public option.
I think if you watch what the president says last night, I think he's very clear on this. Yes, sir.
Robert, we heard the president today again say he's open to talking to anybody about any ideas, but is it fair to say that actions are speaking louder than words? Today, the president's meeting with a group of just Democrats. Saturday, he's traveling to Minneapolis, a state that has got two Democratic senators, a state that gave you the 60th U.S. Senate seat.
There's 59 U.S. Senate.
There's now 59, right. I understand that, but it was gave you the 60 at the time.
Yes. I remember Minnesota being a swing state at or around this time last year. It was about the time the Republican convention ended in St. Paul, Minnesota.
My point is,
with Tim Pawlenty.
My point is, the president talked a lot about Republican ideas, bipartisanship. Should we expect to see a meeting here at the White House with a group of Republicans?
I presume we will have Republicans and Democrats down here to talk about this proposal. The president didn't go to Capitol Hill just to give lip service to both sides of the aisle. I don't think that. You can judge one day's effort or one afternoon's effort the one day after the speech. The president is focused on hearing all of those ideas. Again, as you said, he reiterated that not once, but then a second time at the cabinet meeting today when you all were in there. I hesitate to, Minnesota was was a swing state for quite some time in the general election, so I don't know that I would throw Minnesota in one.
It's about winning votes, and a lot of times, we watch presidents, when they've got initiatives that they're trying to win votes, all of a sudden they show up in states where they're trying to get a certain. It's obvious you have both Democratic Senate votes. So I'm just saying, should we not read into where you're going?
No, the state wasn't picked for who represents it in the Senate, no more than it was in who represents it at any level of government. It's a state the president hasn't been to and looks forward to going to on Saturday.
Who's the last Republican besides Olympia Snow that he's talked with about the president himself talked with about health care?
I have to go back and look at my call list.
Recent?
I don't have the call list. I'd have to go back and look. Let me go look at this.
And following up on Afghanistan. does the president believe there should be an exit strategy at some point?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the president, first and foremost, I think the president has always discussed, and particularly since coming to office, that there isn't a military solution alone for Afghanistan. We do not have the troops or the money to be there in perpetuity. I think the Secretary of Defense has been pretty clear on this as well, that we're not there to build some utopian democracy. We have very clear goals. We are working with Congress on those benchmarks, as the Speaker mentioned in her press availability today, to disrupt, dismantle, and destroy al-Qaeda and its extremist allies. But no, the president does not in any way envision us being there forever.
Should the American public expect to see the president say, "Okay, look, we have an exit strategy. Here it is," or
I think the president will continue to talk about later. I think the president will continue to talk about the objectives and the goals that he has for this policy, and underscore that again, we don't have the human resources. Or the material resources to be there forever.
Well, what's the strategy?
What's the strategy? The president has outlined.
To leave.
The president and Congress are working on very strict benchmarks to measure our progress in, as I just said, dismantling, disrupting, and destroying Al Qaeda.
So how long will that take?
That's part of the current assessment that is going on. Obviously, this is an effort, Helen, that started in 2001, and I think it's fair to say the president was a critic of the lack of attention and focus paid to this effort for quite some time, that he asked that the strategy be reassessed during the transition. Part of that reassessment was changing commanders on the ground, and as part of that change, we now have received General McChrystal's assessment of his first 2 months in Afghanistan. Jonathan?
Picking up on Chuck's line of questioning, is Democrat, but pre-Afghanistan, is Democratic unity now the first objective post-speech in the legislative strategy? And what are you thinking right now about avoiding reconciliation?
We have always discussed on any topic the notion that we want, first and foremost, Democrats and Republicans to work together to solve the problem of the magnitude that healthcare is. I wouldn't put one series of lawmakers above another. I think every vote in Congress is created equal, and the president would be pleased and happy to have each and every one of them. I think there will be extensive consultation with Congress, Democrats, Republicans, and independents about how we move forward best on this legislation.
And can you tell us what other folks like the Chief of Staff, Jim Messina, Phil Schiller, what their, and actually Joe Biden, what their roles are right now, what they might be doing today and the next couple of days?
All four of those guys spent at least an hour and a half in a cabinet meeting today where healthcare was discussed extensively. Can somebody go check on the just have them turn it off if the static is but I have no doubt that they will be reaching out throughout Capitol Hill, again, to Democrats and Republicans. Nancy Ann will be meeting with groups of lawmakers to discuss how best we move forward.
On Joe Biden, the Vice President was called on as a pivotal person at the end of the stimulus process, and I wonder what role you see the Vice President taking here.
Well, look, obviously the Vice President brings extensive knowledge of a number of members of Congress, knowledge that the President relied on in the buildup, in the days ahead of the speech, and the discussions, the policy discussions that we had here. And he will continue to rely on his knowledge and his expertise in moving this legislation forward. I think Vice President Biden, on this topic as well as many other topics, plays an incredibly important and crucial role for the President and our team.
Mark. Robert, can you elaborate beyond the one sentence in your written readout on what the President said to Prime Minister Brown about the release of the Pan Am 103 bomber?
Look, the President restated to Prime Minister Brown our opposition that was conveyed to the Scottish government prior to their decision. And the President relayed during this conversation the disappointment in the decision that had been made. He thought this was a mistake. He continues to think it was a mistake. Obviously, nearly 200 Americans lost their lives in that terrorist tragedy. The President and the administration had communicated clearly to the Scottish government that we believed any release would be a mistake, and that this individual should serve the remainder of their term in Scotland.
Is the President satisfied with what Brown responded?
He is satisfied, but again underscores his opposition to and disappointment at the decision that was made.
Did Prime Minister Brown respond differently to what he has said publicly?
I would. We sort of have a practice not to read out what other governments have said, and I would ask you to speak with the Brits on that.
And one more: is there any healthcare event beyond Saturday coming up in the early days of next week?
Let me. I have not looked that far ahead on schedule. Lynn, do you have a?
This follows up on that release situation. Later this month in New York, the President's going to host a reception for the world leaders in connection with the UN opening. Will Gaddafi then be invited to that reception?
We will get a list of who is and who won't be invited to the party.
All the world leaders are.
Having not been here for an administration's effort at the UN General Assembly, let me get NSC to weigh in on that. Yes, ma'am.
Of the $900 billion cost over 10 years that the President said last night, could you outline and break down the specifics as to how the White House is getting?
I don't have some of that paper with me. I'll outline in sort of broad effect. Obviously, we have discussed, I think, in some detail, the waste, fraud, and abuse that is prevalent in Medicare, that strengthening the Medicare Trust Fund through spending healthcare dollars more wisely, ending the insurance company subsidies to Medicare Advantage. Obviously, you have some amount of revenue from agreements with the hospitals and with the pharmaceutical industry, some of which will be used in the pharmaceutical industry's example to close the donut hole for seniors and, again, strengthen the Medicare program as we know it. Also, some of that will be used for broader health care reform. And then, obviously, the fee that we talked about on insurance companies is a broad part of that as well.
Do you have any estimate of how much that fee?
I don't have that with me.
Threshold that the President would like to see?
No, I think that's one of the things that that we'll work through and discuss with Congress as we move forward. Obviously, there
haven't set a threshold.
Not that I know of yet. No.
Robert, a couple on health care and then one on trade. How would the medical malpractice aspects that the President talked about last night work, and when are we likely to see action on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, the President instructed the Secretary of Health and Human Services to begin working on these projects immediately. I'll give you a couple of different examples of how some of these things might work, and as these get developed, obviously we'll report on them for you. The President introduced legislation with now Secretary of State Clinton in 2005 in the Senate that builds on very successful programs that medical systems and hospitals and areas have tried that seeks mediation over litigation in ways of solving some of these disputes. I think the President and his team will look at very closely what Congressman Bart Gordon put in the energy and commerce legislation, which requires prior to a suit being heard in court, prior to that litigation moving forward, a certificate of merit that is given by a board of medical professionals that certifies the validity of any litigation moving forward to cut down on unnecessary costs. And as the president said, defensive medicine that he hears about from doctors and doctors' groups.
Does that suggest that part of this could become a part of the legislation itself, or would you want to handle it entirely through the administrative process?
I think open both.
Okay. And the president talked about this this trigger or hinge mechanism. If you're not saving enough, we have to hold back.
Correct.
Is that a must-have in the legislation?
That is one of the president's proposals, and I think one of the things that he'll insist on being in reform. Again, I think it underscores the promise that he made that this must not add to the deficit. And it's probably an uncomfortable moment for Democrats and Republicans when the president reminded many in that chamber that we'd watched over the past many years sometimes very popular programs added to the government's tab without being paid for, right? $1.6 trillion for tax cuts in 2001 and 2003. Several hundred billion dollars, I forget the final price tag, for Medicare Part D. Wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that never went through a budget process. We have troops in two countries and you are going through an emergency supplemental process that is not counted on the deficit. I mean, those are three pretty broad examples of big chunks that we're now paying for that weren't paid for when we started. I think the president is determined, as we address the challenges that this country faces, that one of the challenges that we face is paying for what we want to do. And I think that's exactly what the president outlined.
That's only up until 2013, or does that continue on after?
No. I think the
10-year window of this legislation.
The president extended that going forward. Do you have a follow-up on that?
So, if it is so important to keep this deficit neutral, why not outline specific ways of getting to the $900 billion?
Well, again, I just outlined some very specific ways that the president seeks
dollar,
to do it.
Well,
again,
dollar.
we're going to work with Congress on. It'd be hard to estimate the total amount raised by the fee on Cadillac insurance plans, the fee on insurance companies without a threshold. Obviously, that's something that we're going to discuss with Democrats and Republicans alike who have come to the table at this point in the debate, understanding that this proposal can do several things, including bend that cost curve.
You do have some sense to be able to add up.
Well, there's a broad range of different things, yes.
Let me do the one trade thing, Robert. It's somewhat obscure, but it's pending, so I hope you have some general analysis you can give me on this.
We'll see on that.
A union representing U.S. tire makers won a claim against China for the surge of tire imports in the United States. The president has until the 17th of this month to either follow an International Trade Commission recommendation of 3 years of tariffs against China or do something else or nothing at all. What is his approach? How is this being handled? Is he more in favor of sanctions, meaning tariffs, or some sort of negotiated mediation on this?
I am aware, but you'll find the answer to be semi-unsatisfactory. It's obviously something that the administration we didn't have an economic daily briefing with the president today for some scheduling reasons, but this has been touched on in a couple of those and is being worked on with representatives from the Department of Labor, the Department of Commerce, the U.S. Trade Representative, and the NEC. And as we get closer to that deadline, we'll have more on that.
Would a response involving tariffs be viewed by the president as protectionist or within the realm of something that is a natural response if you are a victim of surge or...
Yeah. Let me just not get ahead of where we are in that at this point. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. The United States Olympic Committee is meeting today in Chicago about the city's bid to host the 2016 Games. The International Olympic Committee makes its decision October 2nd in Copenhagen. Apparently, it's very important for a leader to be there. Spain, Tokyo, the leaders of Spain, Tokyo, and Brazil have committed to being there October 2nd in Copenhagen, I believe. Is the president going to go?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Really?
Has
Why
the urge?
Let me double check on the president's schedule. Obviously, I anticipate having representatives there.
Well, we know that Valerie is going. Okay, and there had always been a thought. I thought. Thank you for bringing it up.
No, please.
Right. The gentleman yields his time to the gentlelady from representing Chicago. Yes.
Well, as you know now, you probably made a few million years per go by saying that he's not coming. So if you have some,
I should say, I said that as far as the schedule I had seen, that was not planned. I will. Based on the millions of
Copenhagen, I mean, obviously,
is the date being held?
This is I will, because of those several million ears that have now since perked, check.
Is the date being held?
Let me check. It's hard for me to look into my invisible crystal ball.
If he's not, that he might not come if it was thought that the city's bid, which has a little bumpy road back home right now, was in trouble. So that would be very useful to get a whole picture from it.
Well, I think the last set of articles I read on where the IOC was on Olympic bids had America's bid in Chicago at the top of that list. So I don't, without getting into Chicago politics on that, I think this country's bid is very well represented and seems to be making progress. Reclaiming your time.
No. So you will, could this be a today thing to get back and call?
I will endeavor to call up the schedule when I get back to my office.
Thank you.
Yep.
Get back to
all of them. These million or so years include quite a few dozen in here. Yes, ma'am.
A couple of statistics questions. I noticed last night the president said 30 million or more than 30 million American citizens lack insurance, and I was struck by that figure. The commonly used figure, the one the Census Bureau used today, was 46 million people without
46.3,
insurance.
46.3, right.
Right. So why did the president limit it to 36 million or 30 million citizens? Was this a way to draw a distinction between American citizens and those who are illegal immigrants and the subject of contention, or what?
Obviously, this has been a point of some contention during the speech, as I recall.
Right.
The proposal that the president outlined covers American citizens. I think he was clear for almost everyone that the legislation does not cover, his plan would not cover illegal immigrants. If you subtract a rough estimate from that 46.3 million, you get a number that's somewhat unknown, but in the 30s, that represents American citizens, as the president pointed out. I would go one step further to point out that last night was not the first time that the president has talked about the fact that illegal immigrants aren't covered or would not be covered as part of his plan. He said that most recently in the interview, radio interview that was done here, and said that also in the campaign in 2008.
So in effect, he's saying that a quarter or more of the people who currently lack insurance will still lack insurance once the plan is passed. Is that correct?
Well, again, I don't know.
Many uninsured people in this country, presumably driving up health care costs. Is that correct?
Well, I think the president would look at because he's the would look at how many American citizens are covered under a proposal rather than looking at different numbers that don't include American citizens.
So I'm asking those, is it then his vision that there could still be, at the end of the day, as many as, say, 16 million people living in this country without health insurance? Who?
I don't think it's the president outlined a plan that doesn't cover illegal immigrants. The number that the president seeks to cover is to provide universal access to coverage for American citizens. I think you heard the president even discuss last night that there are going to be some American citizens who decide they don't want or don't need health insurance that are also going to be living here.
Robert, what's the reasoning behind that? Obviously, there's some concerns among conservative Republicans about this. Have to do with it that you're not legislating the negative here. You know, you're not adding, you know, passing this amendment, I guess, that they want to, you know, triple check that there is no way illegal immigrant. I mean, why not go along with that if that assuages?
Well, but Chuck, I think here's
what is the legal reason.
Let me just give you this example. I got how many questions for how many weeks about why the president hasn't offered his views on the legislation, right? How come he hasn't introduced his plan? We did that last night. The president said in his plan, it wouldn't cover illegal immigrants.
So if it takes throwing an amendment on this, you guys are okay?
The president, the legislation that the president will sign won't cover illegal immigrants.
But in the past, he has used the larger number, so then they were including illegal immigrants.
I think there was just a reference to the larger number.
But you knew that included a very large number, millions of illegal immigrants. So isn't it logical for people to assume that for a long time you were including illegal immigrants and people you wanted to get health insurance?
No more than I would assume the logic of them having listened to what he said in the campaign where it's not going to happen.
Well, Joe Wilson this morning said, defended his outburst by saying that illegal immigrants could still buy money on the federal exchange.
I stood up here and caught a lot of spears for a lot of days about where the president's plan was. It was delivered last night, 10 minutes after 8, zip code 20015. The president outlined and reiterated his belief, as enunciated in the campaign in 2008, that his plan wouldn't cover illegal immigrants.
So are you saying
I'm not a member of the
In his plan, would he say that an illegal immigrant could not take money out of his pocket, go on the federal exchange, and buy an insurance policy with his money?
The policy would not cover, the plan would not cover illegal immigrants.
Period. I think the question is, the House bill, for instance, 3200, explicitly says that none of the subsidies can go to people who are in this country illegally.
Right.
But some of the criticisms, and what the Congressional Research Service analysis says of it, is that people who are illegal, as John points out, are able to buy insurance, as they already do.
I can't speak for somebody that's here illegally, but I would think it would be somewhat of a bad course of events if you're here illegally to alert people that you are here illegally and sign up for a government program.
Just to put the dot on that, I mean, there are illegal immigrants who are covered by emergency Medicaid all the time, millions.
As a result of, I think, a 1986 law that was signed by President Reagan.
Yes. Right, so, but the House bill.
Congress took up immigration reform in 1986.
The House bill would expand Medicaid, and that could lead to an expansion of emergency Medicaid that would cover, possibly. So when you say that illegal immigrants will not be covered, does that mean they can't be covered by any expansion in emergency Medicaid? They can't buy into the health exchange again.
Let me check with the healthcare guys on how this would affect the 1986 law, but they would not be covered under the healthcare exchange and the proposal.
They would be prohibited from buying through the exchange.
If I could just follow, this sort of takes us to another issue that the president has said he wants to address, which is immigration reform. And I wonder, would it be his vision when he addresses immigration reform to bring those people who are illegal immigrants into a path towards citizenship and ultimately into a status where they could be insured?
I don't know what would be involved in or has been involved in the legislation in the past.
Can I follow up on that to clarify what you mean by an exchange? Because you keep saying that you have a range of choices in an exchange, one of them being a public option, which, you know, means that if an illegal immigrant wants to get insurance and it isn't a public option, then how could there be any documentation or any way forbidding them to do that?
I'm you've taken your confusing question and confused me. I don't have the slightest idea what you're talking about.
On the fees, the president.
We're skipping that one because. You're as befuddled as I am. Fair enough.
All right. Here's a simple question.
One would presume that one was. Go ahead.
Okay. The president has talked about imposing a fee on insurers that offer high-end policies.
Right.
But he used to talk about being open to a tax, and Baucus's plan calls for a tax on high-end insurance policy. So why is he backing off of that?
I think the proposal that the president outlined last night is very analogous to what Senator Baucus apparently has in his plan and what Senator Kerry has offered what Senator Kerry devised this idea.
It might be analogous, but it doesn't change the tax charge. It's a fee.
Ask an insurance company whether their fee or whatever you call it is it's the same thing.
Robert, briefly on the 9/11 anniversary, I know we've talked about some of this before. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in whatever preview you can give us on the president's remarks. But also, I know we've also talked about this before. Has the president, since taking office, made a conscious effort to tone down some of the war on terror rhetoric that we have heard over the years from the Bush administration and specifically on 9/11 anniversaries?
Let me just outline again what the president's going to do. The president will visit with families at the memorial at the Pentagon and speak there. I think we just announced that Vice President Biden and his wife will visit New York and take part in that official ceremony. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's the first time either a president or a vice president, sitting president or vice president, has taken part in the official ceremony. The official ceremony. I think that's the case, but I certainly will ask the vice president to go back and.
The 5th anniversary. That's George the official Bush anniversary. Was president.
Well, I
think so. Sorry,
back to the look. This was. I'm not sure exactly what you were trying to get at in your question. I think the president. I mean, I think if you look at how the president observed this last year, as a candidate for the presidency with his Republican competitor. For the same office, there was a conscious effort on both sides, I think, quite frankly, to remove the politics of 9/11 and instead remember the sacrifice that so many made, the tragedy that was involved, and do it in a way that removed political labels from such an important day. I don't know if that answers that part of your question.
Let me ask it this way. President Bush used to say repeatedly, America's a nation at war. He did so on 9/11, but other occasions during the year. My impression is that since taking office, President Obama has purposely tried to turn down the heat on the rhetoric.
I think we've certainly cut down on the use of the phrase. But our focus is on getting the policy right. I think the president spends a part of each of his day in meetings about and thinking about the men and women that we have in Iraq and Afghanistan and that are stationed throughout the world to protect our freedom and to address Islamic extremism and. That takes up part of his day and is something that the sacrifice to which he's thankful for, and I think all of us are thankful for each and every day. Regardless of how it's phrased, he's mindful of the effort of so many on our behalf. Savannah?
Just to clear this up, are you saying that the president's plan, in contrast to what Democratic plans are right now, would expressly prohibit illegal immigrants from buying private insurance on this exchange?
Let me double check. That's my impression, yes.
Okay, so beyond, we all know that the House bill even says you can't subsidize, no government subsidies for illegal immigrants.
I will double check.
But on a free market.
Again, this is not something that, I think the president is pretty clear on not covering illegal immigrants. Yes, Mark?
Thanks.
But illegal immigrants would still, if they were grievously injured and injured and wandered into a hospital, be able to receive the same emergency care that they do now. It's a basic human right, right? I mean,
I don't know whether the legislation envisioned changes, as I said, the 1986 immigration law that went through Congress and was signed by then President Reagan.
What I wanted to ask is, when you're going back to check with your health experts, have you guys, and I think this follows on Cheryl's question, been able to?
She asked like eight.
They were great, right? But it's sort of a catch-22, right? Because there's the political reality that the country probably wouldn't support including illegal immigrants in a comprehensive care bill. But then there's the reality of the way we treat people in this country, which is if you're injured and you go to a hospital, you'll get the care. So,
well, I think I'd go back and point you to the president's interview. The president's interview where he last talked about this.
Can you achieve true cost savings, sufficient cost savings to repair the system and bend the cost curve if you still treat illegal immigrants through emergency care because you can't do it the other way?
Well, certainly the president believes so. If you're taking some untold number out of 46 and reducing it by, or quite frankly, more than that, I don't have the latest number. Handy on an estimate for illegal immigrants is what, 10 to 11 minus 46.3 is 36 to 35.3. So you're reducing by, again, I'm in politics, that's why I'm not so good at math, three quarters or between two thirds and three quarters.
But those 10 million hanging out there are not going to mess up the equation?
I think the president believes that through a series of proposals that he's outlined, we can achieve significant cost savings and bend that cost curve. Pete.
Robert, the president during the campaign talked about surmounting old divisions, throttling back on some of the polarization in the country. Given the outburst we saw on the floor of the House last night, and given some of the anger we saw at the town hall meetings over the summer, is that project still alive? Is that feasible to try to ratchet down that temperature?
Sure. Quite frankly, I think that's what Congressman Wilson did around 10:45 last night. Look, the president, I think, said this today, that we all make mistakes. Sometimes we all let our emotions get the better of us. But I think the president outlined a series of ideas last night, many of which Republicans have talked about. We talked about one today, medical malpractice reform. It might not be everything that everybody wants, but I did notice a number of people on that side of the chamber stand up and applaud. I have seen remarks from Republicans throughout the political spectrum discuss the need to get something done this year. We always take them at their word on that. We're working with Democrats and Republicans to get something done, and I think there's a genuine chance to see reform this year. April.
Robert, a follow-up somewhat to that. Understanding that the Republican Party and even this White House, some people in this White House, want to see this liar comment story go away. It's
see the what?
The liar comment story go away.
I don't think it. Well, go ahead. No.
Go ahead. Oh,
it's like I'm no, I'm not going to say that. I think the story largely goes away, April, because a congressman admitted a mistake, called the chief of staff to apologize, and the president today accepted publicly that apology.
That's the point. The White House.
I knew it.
Okay. Either way, there's a large segment of this country that's still very upset with the fact that decorum was breached, and other issues at the very least. And they want this man to either step down, resign, what have you, something to happen to him. And with this apology being accepted, you know, it's still not going away. What do you say to that segment of America that still wants something, some type of punishment? Even people are asking for a public apology. Since he made a public declaration of the word in the well of the House, people are wanting a public apology from this man.
I don't think, I'm not here, and I don't think anybody in this building or anybody, quite frankly, on Capitol Hill is here to absolve what was said. We take Congressman Wilson at his word that he apologizes for an outburst that he regrets. That was the message that was communicated to the chief of staff last night. The president strongly believes, though, that if we are going to deal with many of the big problems in our country that for years and years and years have not been settled, partly because we get into these very convenient, often Washington games, where seeking a solution takes a backseat to political points being scored and name-calling and what have you. The president is determined to break that cycle. The president is determined to seek solutions for and get solutions passed for those problems. I think millions of Americans would rather see their president and their Congress, all of their Congress, focus on providing that security and stability for those that have insurance and providing a route to accessible and affordable coverage for those who don't, rather than debating the back and forth of the apology.
Robert, can I just follow on that, please?
Sure. There is a bigger issue here, which a lot of people see following on April's question, which is, one, the decorum of the House, and the other is the respect for the presidency of the United States, no matter who it is. Senator Spector and Whip James Clyburn both this morning said that if you just let him get away from making a phone call to Rahm Emanuel, you're just encouraging other people to do the same thing. So don't you need something like a public apology or a reprimand to make sure that
you establish a tradition? If you talk to the press secretary of that congressman today, I would not think that he's gone unpunished. My sense is that phone rang off the hook for quite some time.
Encourage the same kind of behavior for other people, for other presidents, no matter who it is.
I doubt anybody wants to do that and stand up and publicly apologize. I don't think that's what people want to do, George.
Rob, two weeks ago you said the president was willing to go to the moon if necessary to get health care reform.
I will check on that about Copenhagen as well.
the schedule, yeah. House Republicans...
Could be on the way.
House Republicans have been waiting since May trying to get a meeting with the president. Are they somehow in an orbit beyond the moon, or why hasn't he responded?
It's tempting to answer that in certainly different ways. No, the president... I mentioned that the president would meet with many groups and many different leaders, and I believe that that includes Senate Republicans. He's talked to them. It includes House Republicans, again, many of which I think have constructive ideas and want to see this process move forward.
You don't rule out that he'll accept a meeting with House Republicans?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, again, the president went to Capitol Hill 4 hours after the House Republican caucus announced its opposition to the recovery plan in order to go up there to talk to House Republicans, whose leadership had just said, "We oppose your plan," to try to get them to support the plan. I don't doubt that the president will have a similar effort on this legislation as well. Yes, sir.
Who will be the ultimate arbiter of whether the health care legislation that comes before the president's desk increases the budget deficit? Will it be the OMB? Will it be the CBO and other entity? Who do you foresee being the arbiter on that?
I don't know that it's been designated, but obviously CBO is by law charged with letting you and America and, more importantly, Congress know how much legislation is going to cost. So I certainly believe that they will enter a verdict into what a bill costs, and I think that would certainly be a large part of this.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. I wouldn't say binding, but I would say it goes a big way. Thanks, guys.